This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
This is Danny and Gallant. It's Wednesdays, which means we bring Michael Bumpus in. He joins us here for Blue 42.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Bump! How are you now?
Awesome. How are you guys doing this lovely morning?
Doing wonderful. Good. On this Wednesday, hump day.
It's so rainy.
Hump day.
It's rained every day this year.
Has it?
It's rained every single day this year.
See, I'm
every
just so used day? To it now.
Yeah.
It doesn't even bother me.
Every single day this year. It's rained.
I guess it did rain for a little bit on Sunday, but there were a couple of hours on Sunday where it was really nice outside.
Yeah, some scattered showers.
Well, Paul is a Seattleite, everyone.
I've come to appreciate it.
Just happened.
It was.
It was partly sunny on Sunday because
great.
There was like 2 hours of nice weather.
I'm not going to lie. That is the thing that I have come to appreciate most. When there are brief windows of sunshine, I'm like, all right, I need to go outside because otherwise I'm going to continue to look like the translucent vampire-esque figure that I always am. Bump, would Seattle's defense be helped by a better offense?
I think so. I think that when you have an offense who can get into a shootout, that's the thing. It's like, can this offense get into a shootout and put up 40-something points and put together big play drives? This offense has that 10-play, 12-play drive type deal. When you have an offense who could get into a shootout, three-play drive touchdowns, that just instills confidence in your defense. Like, look, okay, we don't have to be perfect. Make these guys work, and the offense can bail us out a little bit. So I think it's more of a mentality type thing. When the defense knows that they have a quarterback, a running game, and a passing game that can get it done, that can bail them out, I think they play more free. Therefore, they're more likely to make more plays.
That's interesting. Because when we were talking about it in the first hour, one of the things that we said is that, hey, the biggest advantage of having an aggressive offense for the defense is, well, you get ahead, you know the opponent's going to pass. But you're right. It also does free up, like, there's a mental edge that it gives to your defense too of like, hey, all right, we've got something to build on. Like, it can help address their mentality as well.
Yeah, they don't feel like they have to be perfect. And with this defense, with all the young guys out there, all the question marks with the D-line, secondary, I guess some questions have been answered there. It just allows them to play more free. I feel like this defense felt like they didn't have to be perfect, but they had to exceed expectations. To whereas you get this same defense, you get a better offense out there, I think the Hawks are still playing.
If there was a patron saint of irrational confidence in sports, it would probably be Dion Waiters. But I do think that Kansas City Chiefs, their defense, has gotten a little bit of that irrational confidence. And I think it's partly due to that to the offense that you have on the other side of things, too.
Yeah, I mean, look at the way they played in the postseason. I mean, they were getting after the quarterback. Their defense stepped up. And especially after you come down, you're down 24 the first week in the playoffs, you're down 17, and that offense comes back. Defense is like, all right, guys, hold them to 26, and we'll be good to go.
Frank Clark said they were the best defense in the NFL, which is ludicrous.
No, in the world.
Right, in the world.
Best defense in the world.
They're like 15th, but he's like, yeah, that's what happens, I think. I like this idea. Get a little more confidence for the defense by adding to the offense.
Frank Clark can say whatever he wants at this point, right? Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, although I'm going to enjoy watching him say whatever he wants, and then when the check comes due next year, see how he handles that. He's got a lot of people looking at him. I like the patron saint of irrational confidence. Like the guy, and Dion Waiters is a great selection where, like, you have no reason to think you're that good. Like, it's not even just that you're not as good as you think you are. You have no reason to think you're that good.
Sure. You got to be delusional as an athlete. You have to convince yourself. I kid you not, at some point in my career, I looked at my mom and go, Mom, I have the best hands in the world. And I literally believed it. She gassed me up. Yes, you do, baby. You got the best hands. Yes, I do have the best hands in the world.
How do you keep the irrational confidence when you go through a down moment on the field?
You just lean on all the good times. You know, you have to realize there are going to be bad times on the field, but you lean on the good times. It's a slump. I'll get over it. So mental toughness. Some guys get into that hole and don't climb themselves out. Those are the mentally weak type guys. Mentally tough, the guys who are delusional, the guys who believe themselves more than they should, always find a way to get out that hole.
The most irrationally confident player I've ever seen was Vladimir Radmanovic, who was
yes
6'10", had your complexion. Actually, look.
Whiter than me?
Yes.
Wow.
Very white with very, very.
Impressive.
And Phil Jackson, when he played for the Lakers, described him. He said, Vladimir Radmanovich, he wants to shoot to see if he's hot. Then he wants to shoot to see if he's still hot. Then if he's cold, he wants to shoot so he can get hot. Like, there was no point that he got the ball that he considered anything other than just cranking it up.
Any NBA player who wore the thick wristbands on both wrists is very confident. You don't see that in the NBA these days.
He also wore the number 77.
That's a weird one.
Yeah. Question two. Paul brought this idea up. What do you think about adding Emmanuel Sanders? He's a free agent. He's 32. I've been burned before. Yeah. Deion Branch, TJ Houshmandzadeh. There's a list of guys. Percy Harvin, throw him on there. Sidney Rice was pretty good, but was he ever as good as? Should they look at Sanders?
You have to look at him. You know, you mentioned Deion Branch and Houshmandzadeh. That's when I was there. And as a player, you bring these guys in like, man, they're proven. They're going to do something. But you also realize they're towards the end of their career. Emmanuel Sanders last year, 66 catches, 868 yards, 5 touchdowns. He would be the third best receiver on the Seattle Seahawks with those numbers. That's what they're looking for, a number 3 receiver. If he can come in and just settle down and be okay with being the third option, I think he'd be fine. But coming off the year that he had, the success that he had, I don't think he's going to be okay with being that third receiver. You got to talk to him. You have to entertain it. But you got to be transparent and be like, hey, these are realistic numbers for you.
I feel like he would be the third option in San Francisco next year, though, because you've got George Kittle and you've got Debo Samuel, who will be a second-year player.
Yeah, especially the way Debo's played, man. Debo's a scary individual. I mean, and they used him more as a running back during the Super Bowl rather than a pass catcher. So, no, I'm with you. I see him being a third receiver over there, but he's familiar with it. I think he'll be more likely to embrace the role because he's been there already. And they've had success. Now, if you leave, you want to leave. You don't want to make a lateral move. You want to take a step up. So if he leaves, I expect him to want to be a number one or number two.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned, okay, you know what you have. He knows what he has at quarterback. He has a quarterback that overthrew him by 10 yards to lose the Super Bowl. If you were a wide receiver for the San Francisco 49ers and you're in Emmanuel Sanders' shoes, Bump, you've played the position before, would you be frustrated with Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe specifically for that performance in the Super Bowl as opposed to his overall body of work last year?
Yeah, I think it's just the Super Bowl. I mean, because overall, he did okay. He led them to the Super Bowl. You know, he did exactly what he was asked to do. He didn't overachieve. He didn't underwhelm. He did what the system asked him to do. Now, because of the system, he wasn't used to making those throws. He never really had that much pressure where it's like, Jimmy, come win this football game for us. So he missed plays like that. And that's what I was telling my buddies. I go, man, you can't really blame Jimmy. He's really a second-year guy. He's playing in 20-something games. It's a Super Bowl. He goes from, hey, manage this game to, okay, now you have to win this game for us. The biggest game of the year, the Super Bowl, win this game, make the throw. He just wasn't ready for the moment. So you got to be frustrated in the moment. But you look at the overall season, Jimmy did okay.
How do you get better as Garoppolo? What is the next element of his game? I mean, as a receiver, I feel like you can see that a lot better where you know what you want more out of this guy. What do you see in him that he needs to work on outside of maybe just being less jittery in the pocket?
I'll tell you what Paul Moyer says, he has to be able to throw outside the numbers. He's not very good at that. And he has to throw the ball away. Last game, he tried to throw the ball away, and it was an interception. He got picked off. He doesn't like throwing the football away. For some reason, he thinks he can scramble. That's not his game. I think he realizes who he is, and then get with a vet. Get with a vet with some mental toughness. Get with a sports psychologist, whatever you got to do. Because at this point, I think it's him developing to throw the ball outside the numbers and mentally being able to calm himself down and make the throws that he knows he can make.
Question number 3. We heard that Greg Olsen, who has parted ways with the Carolina Panthers, seems like the Panthers sort of kicked him out the door, is interested in the Seattle Seahawks, who have interest in him. Would he be a good option for this offense?
Man, one, he's an 80s baby, so I'm always going to root for the 80s baby. 35 years old, and March 11th, I think he turns 35. I think you have to take a look at him. You got Will Disley, who I think is better than Greg Olsen, but he hasn't stayed healthy in the past 2 years. You got Jacob Hollister, who I feel isn't a number one tight end, but can still be serviceable and help you out. If Olsen comes into the situation, I think he has to realize that, one, he's going to be a mentor. He's got to get Disley right. He's got to get Hollister right. And whoever else they bring in, I still expect him to go look for another tight end. And he has to be big in the block game, which I think he's a decent blocker. But he also has to realize that he's 35. He's missed so many games in the past 2 years that he might not get the time that he likes if Disley is healthy. Now, he's just your backup plan. If Disley shows improvement, he comes in, he's ready to go. Olsen has to realize that you got to go with the youth in the situation. There's still going to be some opportunities for you out there. He's a three-time Pro Bowler. I mean, he can get it done, but he's 35. It is what it is. He's 35. You can't expect him to be available throughout the whole season. So, again, understand who you are. You're an older guy. There's a tight end here who has Pro Bowl potential. Are you okay with mentoring, and are you okay with coming in when needed and not just being the solidified starter?
Yeah, I completely. Like what you said, I think, is a perfect description of the role that he would excel at if he wants it. And you have to be clear with him. I think that's important to set veteran expectations. You're one of the three tight ends on the team. Like, yep. I think you could say, hey, that's what we see for you. But there's going to be games where Jacob Hollister is probably going to get more opportunities than you are because he's proven himself as a receiver. Olsen's a bigger dude. He's got a really, really strong productive history. You know his feel for the game. I think he'd be a great addition. But if he wants to be the number one tight end, this probably isn't the spot for him. If that role is what's most important.
And is there a spot for a 35-year-old number one tight end in this league? With the way the NFL throws the football around now and the tempo and the speed of the game, it's hard for a 35-year-old to be there every single snap. So, again, but that's what's so hard about athletes is that in your mind, you can still do whatever you did when you were 25 years old. Now, the real good ones realize who they are and they kind of change their game. It's easier to do that at a quarterback position than at a position where you're running down the field, you're blocking, you're moving. So it's a mental game that these 30-year-old and up guys are playing with themselves right now.
The Patriots did it with Ben Watson, who had retired and then sort of retired again, and then they bring him back in. And I think the idea of these guys accepting roles, don't you feel like there's an element going back to basketball again of, I get the opportunity to play with Russell Wilson. I'd love to play with Russell Wilson. If I'm Emmanuel Sanders, if I'm Greg Olsen, I mean, he's the second best quarterback in the game right now. It's arguable to make him the number one quarterback in the game if you really want to. You can make enough to say, okay, well, he has more pelts on the wall than Patrick Mahomes, although now they both have one Super Bowl trophy between the two of them. Two trophies between the two of them. But I feel like there are a lot of guys who would want to play with Wilson, and I think that Greg Olsen would be okay with 30 catches playing with a guy like that.
And that's what you sell. You sell Russell Wilson. You sell Bobby Wagner. You tell him, look, man, we were 11-5 last year with a defense that was suspect with a bunch of injuries on offense. You could be the guy to help us go to the next level. You might not get all the time that you like, but we're missing some pieces. And you just sell the program. You do what Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson did during Pro Bowl weekend. Sell it, sell it, sell it. So it's a different approach when it comes to these vets. You can't promise them the world, but you got to paint the picture for them. Let them know, like, we're close to making a run. You could be a big part of that.
That is Blue 42 with Michael Bumpus, who's going to be in with us for the rest of the hour. Whenever you think about, because I agree with you, Paul, like that sounds really, really rational. And like, hey, know where you're at in your career, and this is a great opportunity, and you're not going to go, if you get a starting job, it might be with a bad team right now. And instead, get a good role on a great team with a great quarterback. But I always think, and the example that comes back in my mind is always Hushman Zada, because that was a guy that when you saw him physically, and you watched how fast he was or how fast he wasn't, and then he caught 80 passes his first year here, and that was because they were feeding him the ball to keep him happy because they were worried about sort of how he was going to knock the offense off kilter if he wasn't happy. That's a terrible position to be in when you're having to sort of cater to a veteran who you've sold a big role to, and physically he's just not capable of doing that anymore.
It's an interesting dynamic where, first off, as Bump mentioned at the beginning of this segment, you have to have an irrational confidence to play sports. But how many of these guys that have that irrational self-confidence at the same time know that they have to be self-aware too? Because I think self-awareness is important, because after a certain point in your career, you're just not the same player. You have to accept the fact that Andre Johnson goes from one season having like 80 catches, 900 yards with the Texans, and then Bill O'Brien says, yeah, you're only going to get 40 catches this year. He disagreed. He goes to the Colts. He had exactly like 40 catches the next season. How do you manage between the two of those?
You know, that's a tough question. You know, I played at a way lower scale than a Hushman Zada or anybody else who played in the league. And there was a point where I wasn't getting the reps that I wanted. And it seemed like two out of every three plays I was in was a run play. So that I had to have a conversation with myself like, okay, this is my role with this team. This is what they want me to do. And somehow I flipped a switch in my head and I said, I'll just be the best blocking slot receiver this game has ever saw. And me taking that approach gave me more opportunities because the coaches saw, like, okay, he's okay with his role right now. At least he's not okay with it, but this is the role that we have him in, and he's working his butt off, so we'll give him more opportunities. I don't know what it's like for a superstar. I could imagine for a superstar, you, for 10, 11 years, you've been so productive. You got guys telling you how great you are. Now, all of a sudden, that decline is quick. It happens overnight. And it's all about accepting who you are. And that's where that irrational confidence comes in, because that can kind of mess you all up. Because you're like, hold on, last year I did this, but this year they're asking me to do that. But then just watch the film. Film does not lie. By my, second year in college, I knew what I was good at and I knew what I wasn't good at. And I accepted it, and I worked on those things. So you just got to put on the film. Film doesn't lie.
It's one thing to have a coach tell you that, but I feel like when a coach tells you something, you almost feel like, I would imagine for you, they're challenging you. But if it's a situation where someone who comes up to you, who you trust, and you ask them, like, hey, what am I at this point in my career? How often are they actually going to be honest with you? So that's that element about being a superstar player and all of a sudden just losing it.
Best example of this in my mind as we're talking about it is Allen Iverson. And Allen Iverson is probably my favorite basketball player ever to watch. I loved Allen Iverson. Look what happened late in his career, because he was a franchise player and he got the Philadelphia 76ers to a finals. He won an MVP. But when his ability receded, where he could no longer be the best player on a playoff team, he was still certainly good enough to fill a role. But you look at where he bounced around. He went to the Nuggets. Was with Pistons. The Grizzlies, with the Pistons, and he couldn't be a cog. He could not be a cog. And I think that was mentality. Like, that wasn't just, he didn't go from being one of the best players in the league to not even being able to fit into a rotation. He couldn't be a cog because the volume of shots that he needed for him to feel engaged with the game, it needed to revolve around him. And some athletes aren't able to make that transition. Greg Olsen's obviously not in that. He's never had an entire offense revolve around him. But that question of, hey, you're not going to be the number one tight end necessarily. In fact, there's games where you're probably going to get the third most opportunities out of the tight end room. That can be tough for guys. And it's because that mentality that got them to where they are, it doesn't allow for the room to adjust it and say, like, okay, I need to take a back seat. Because if they had taken a back seat at any point, they wouldn't have gotten that far.
Yeah, it's humbling, man. I can only imagine being 3-time Pro Bowler, one of the best tight ends in the league, and drastically saying, all right, you're going to be the number three. You know, and it's some soul searching. You know, I think who deals with it the most with the athlete is their significant other, because that's when you're the most vulnerable. I'm sure these guys go home, babe, they got me doing this and that, and you unload your emotions and your thoughts on your significant other, and they play a huge role in this. Are they realistic with you? Do they gas you up and say, nah, babe, you deserve this. Let's go to freaking Jacksonville and see what happens down there. Or they're just like, hey, take the money. You're at the end of your career. We have kids. You got other things going on in your life. So I think guys who are super dependent on football as their identity struggle with this the most. The guys who have things going, like Andrew Luck, who can just get up and retire, who got other things moving and value other things in their life, can kind of handle that transition better.
That transition from a point where you are being gassed up all the time, and then the people around you, what do they do in that situation? Are we actually putting some responsibility on the supporting casts of individual athletes?
It has a profound impact.
It does.
Like, you watch whether it's a person who... Because there's times where the circle of an athlete watches their meal ticket drying up. Yeah. And they're sort of like, of course you need more opportunities. Of course they're denying you those things. Some people have Rod Tidwell's wife. Like, I mean, that happens. Where all of a sudden Rod Tidwell's mattresses, we need some Coca-Cola, some soft drink endorsements. And that's not necessarily the best thing at some points. It is Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus is in here. We talked a little bit about Jimmy Garoppolo and how his teammates feel. I don't know the answer of how they feel coming out of that game. I do wonder, I mean, if Richard Sherman was kind of low-key unhappy with some of the things about Russell Wilson, and he was obviously kind of had that interception and the pass play at the goal line buried in his psyche for a long time, I wonder how he and maybe other guys feel about watching their quarterback, because Russell did not lose that Super Bowl against the Patriots. He executed that play the way it was drawn up. He read the right key. The breakdowns in the play that resulted in the interception were Kearse getting kind of ragdolled by Brandon Browner at the line, and then Lockett not going as hard as he could have to the ball, although it's hard to say that he was at fault because Butler just made a hell of a play. Russell made the right read. Now you've got a game where you look at the quarterback and teammates have compassion and empathy for a teammate who doesn't. And it seems like Jimmy's really well-liked in their locker room. But how they deal with that of looking at everybody knows, every player knows what happened in that fourth quarter, which is that Jimmy had some opportunities and he didn't make them. He took a sack on the fourth and 10, and he scrambled and didn't get a throw off on the third and 10 where they really needed first downs.
Yet they have to feel some type of way about it. I believe he threw a corner route when the receiver was running a curl. He misses Sanders deep. He gets sacked on fourth down, which is like a sin in football. You especially in that moment of the game, you just toss the ball up and give yourself
you
a chance. Try to chest pass. And it's like that right there just let me know how Jimmy was a shook, man. It was the game was happening too fast. The moment was too big for him. And if you're a veteran, if you're a Sanders, if you are a Richard Sherman, you see that in that quarterback. You saw it in him. And I think that moment right there, Sherman gained more appreciation for Russell Wilson. He had to look at that situation and say, if that was Russell, he's at least tossing that thing 30 feet or 30 yards down the field and giving us a chance. But if you're going to be on that football team, you can't come out and knock your quarterback because you're going to need him to perform next year for you.
I think it's going to be really hard for them, though, to buy back in because they finally faced a situation where he was the person that was asked to make the play and he couldn't do it.
I don't think it's hard for them to buy back in because I think they'll say all the right things. I think that it's
the saying and feeling. Isn't
yes,
that different?
No, I agree. They're feeling it, and that's going to be lurking in the background. That's why the way that game played out was the best news possible for the Seahawks, was because lurking underneath. They could go 15-1 next year, and Jimmy Garoppolo could have a great season, and everybody's still going to look at it and like, well, we all saw what happened when all the chips were on the table last time. Like, it's going to be lurking. There's not going to be any. I can already see exactly what San Francisco is going to do. They're going to double down on their commitment to the quarterback, and this entire offseason and training camp is going to be talking about how great Jimmy was, and that the one quarter doesn't define a season in which they went 13-3 and won two playoff games. And lurking in the background of all of that is going to be the understanding that, yeah, he had a bad quarter at the most important moment that we've seen, and he's 28, and everybody's going to be kind of like, is he the guy? I don't know. Is he the guy?
You have to double down on him. It's so hard to find a good quarterback. Say what you want about Jimmy. He can't throw the ball deep. He doesn't perform well under pressure. He still has won a bunch of games in 2 years and got you to the Super Bowl. You're just going to throw that away and find some guy off the street and have him fix it all? I don't think so. I think that this is where you rely on your coach and your offseason. Can the offensive coordinator, Shanahan, for the 49ers find a way to step this guy's game up a bit? Can Garoppolo develop during the offseason some kind of mental toughness, whatever he has to do mechanically? I'm not a quarterback coach or whatever he's seeing during the defense. Can he improve? You have to give him a chance to improve. You can't say, oh, got us there one time. Okay, you're gone. Let's go find another franchise quarterback. It just doesn't happen like that.
But you know how quickly things change, Bump. I mean, it could go from you in just a moment, and it could go from the 49ers in just a moment. They're in the toughest division in the NFL, the NFC West. This is a team that really was not challenged in the playoffs at all. And I think to believe that they're going to be able to go through the playoffs in the same fashion that they did this past season is very wishful thinking on their end.
That's realism. The approach that they're going to take is the Stuart Smalley book of college coaching football, which is going to be, we're good enough. Are quarterbacks smart enough? And gosh darn it, people like us. That's going to be the entire next season is going to be about there is no problem with our quarterback. Like that realism, that is going to be the elephant in the room that no one in San Francisco is going to talk about.
So that means there's going to be a lot of massaging verbally, that you hear a lot of quotes.
Yes.
People are like, oh, Jimmy,
it's going to be great.
But if you're Jimmy G, how do you feel about that? If all of a sudden you have all these people that almost are like, it's almost as if they feel bad for you, right?
You're going to do your best to believe every ounce of it. You're going to do
it's
your
be
best
hard,
to
man.
Believe. Yes, it's going to be fantastically hard.
Yeah,
it's going to be great. I can't wait. It's Danny and Gallant. We go around the NFL each day at 9:15. We're going to do the non-FL next. Did that work? It seemed kind
I don't
of
know,
awkward.
Working title.
Okay.
Sell it, Danny. Don't ask questions.
The Wheel of Non-FL coming up next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
The offseason is, well, I'll just be honest, it's a little bit of a challenge. And we've decided to make the transition to tackle it head on and to come up with non-FL subjects. We spend a lot of time talking about the NFL, which is understandable. And this is the time for us to broaden, to become more cultured. Renaissance men, so to speak. Michael Bump is here with Danny and Gallant. So we have a number of different topics that we suggested. And the only way to pick them, well, is through random chance, whether it's our opinions about baseball's designated hitter, the feasibility, should domes be allowed in sports? Like, should we still have domes? You know, some big picture sort of questions that'll be there. Or perhaps which fan base is victimized most. And that comes in the wake of the New York Knicks deciding that, well, they're going to fire their president because,
Steve Mills, of course, you've
got to all of a sudden start rearranging the furniture. So we are going to let random chance decide. We're going to have the DH. Should domes be allowed? Is artificial turf an abomination? Oh, there it is. The most victimized fan base in sports.
Okay.
Where do the New York Knicks rank on this category? They have not been relevant since, what, the lockout season in 1999? They had one 50-win season with Carmelo.
Said LJ Sprewell,
yeah,
back in those days.
When LJ was wearing the weird jockstrap back brace. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Like where you'd see it peeking out of the top of his shorts. You're like, why is that man wearing a 1970s jockstrap?
They've had it really bad. Now, the Garden, Madison Square Garden, the Garden, gets talked about as one of these historic basketball venues, but they haven't won a title since 1973, which is really something else. I think the fact that they are still committed to this team, despite being held hostage by arguably the worst owner in sports, James Dolan, who I think is perhaps more concerned with who actually gets into Madison Square Garden than the actual product on the court. That's the worst part of all. When you're stuck with an owner that you know is getting you nowhere and you know is not leaving anytime soon unless he croaks.
You know, what sucks about them is this is New York City. Danny would know. You walk through New York, there's hoops everywhere. That's what you do. Kids after school, they go play basketball. And one of the worst things about it is Brooklyn, right down the road, is doing exactly what you wanted to do with your franchise. And the fact that the New York Knicks cannot get a superstar free agent to go there is troubling. That says things are happening within this organization that people just don't want no parts of. There's no reason why the New York Knicks should not be competitive. It's the mecca of basketball. Everyone there hoops. And then get the little brother down the street doing exactly what you want to do.
Can I say, I was at a Knicks game this year, too. And to see Knicks faithful still pack the court and still
I
mean, it's incredible. It was versus the Hornets. And they lost by 1 point, like in the most painful fashion. They still have celebrities on the that they're highlighting in game, whether I think it was the guy from Stranger Things, Justin Tuck was there. So it's still a production. And that's why it's heartbreaking to me, too, because the faithful are still there.
They're invested. We should have different categories because there are a lot of bad victimized fan bases. The Cleveland Browns.
Yes.
The Detroit Lions. Uh-huh. The Browns get extra points because they actually had their franchise stolen. Then it went to Baltimore where it's won two Super Bowls. Oh, meanwhile, they've had whatever's gone on there back in Cleveland. The Lions.
The Bills.
Bills have been tortured, but they had a four-year window where they went to four straight Super Bowls. They didn't win any of them.
I think that makes it worse.
Yeah.
To four straight?
Four straight.
Knocked out? I'd rather not go.
Win nary a one, lose four in a row. Washington should be on it. And I guess that would be, there's inept franchises that just don't win, and then there's incompetent franchises that are actually betrayed by their ownership, right? Like Cleveland's just inept.
Yeah.
Buffalo's been inept. Detroit has been inept. Washington, incompetent. The Knicks, incompetent. The Clippers, until recently, incompetent. I think having an incompetent owner, the Jets have been to the conference championship a couple of times, but they're perpetually a little brother.
Where would the Los Angeles Chargers fall for you?
No one cares. That's the problem. Like they just don't have a fan base anymore. They basically killed the entire San Diego fan base.
I mean, but even when they were in San Diego, they still weren't getting it done.
No, they weren't. The Chargers are that difficult one. They're good enough that they'll tease you, but never pay it off. Because they've had successful seasons. They've been to the playoffs. And what, the year they went 14-2 and then lost to the Patriots in the playoffs? That's torture. They've basically tortured their fans out of fandom. Like, we're going to tease you for a good 15 years, and then we're going to move and go somewhere nobody wants us. We can't even sell out a soccer stadium right now.
I'm going to give you an unconventional one, and this is one because of my time there. Houston football, it has been rough. their best days in the 1970s with the Houston Oilers, they were never able to beat the dynasty known as the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they are totally forgotten because they never were able to take them down. But the Steelers will tell you they were the team that challenged them the most when they had Earl Campbell. Then you go to the worst collapse in NFL history until the Super Bowl, the 35-3 collapse against the Buffalo Bills during the era of Warren Moon. They lose their football team. This is a team playing in Texas, lost its football team. They get a franchise back, and while this team does have a quarterback, now you are venturing into the incompetent zone where you have a head coach who literally has all of the power there. And on top of that, they have the coolest throwback uniforms in NFL history, the Oilers, and they're not allowed to ever wear them because the Titans are spiteful and won't give the history of the Oilers back to the city of Houston.
Wait, is that true?
Yes, 100%.
Would they have been the Oilers if they could have been?
I don't know, but there's something about, I think, the fact that the Oilers left that rubs a lot of people in Houston the wrong way. But here's another thing. There are people that are my age in Houston that don't like the NFL because the Oilers left. And they refuse to accept the Texans because it's like a totally different, stranger team. And I think the worst part of all is that Tennessee, basically, because they won't give the history of the Oilers back to the Texans, and I'm not sure the Texans necessarily even want it anymore, but the guys like Earl Campbell are getting honored like midfield at like a Titans game where no one has any idea who they are.
That's not right.
No,
that's not
at all.
Right at all.
I feel bad for them, like legitimately bad.
And don't forget the Cincinnati Bengals.
Bengals are terrible.
You know, and think about it. There were years when they had Ocho Cinco, Hushman Zada, Carson Palmer, and they're playing great football. First round, goodbye. I mean, and the state of Ohio, man, football in Ohio. And Ohio's one of the meccas of football, Ohio and Pennsylvania. And it's been a struggle for teams from Ohio.
At least they have Ohio State. Because if they did not, man, that would be really
difficult.
There's
a state university in Ohio.
Yeah,
I was unaware there was an Ohio State. I was completely unaware of an Ohio State. Cincinnati, the Bengals are like the weird, they are the strangest NFL team. They don't ever trade their draft picks. Everybody else in the draft like trades up and down. They move all over. Nope. The Bengals line up and they make their 7 picks every year, and these are the players that we're going to get. They don't sign anybody else's free agents, pretty much. They only re-sign their own guys. And they don't win, except for Marvin Lewis. Marvin Lewis might have been the best coach in the NFL in those years, simply by through sheer force of will, pulling the Bengals into relevancy. Yeah.
The Bengals are like me in fantasy football. I make my picks. I don't trade anybody. I don't pay attention to the waiver wire. And I haven't won a title in like 9 years. So that makes sense. The Bengals, you have to make moves to be successful. The Bengals just do not do that. That's why I suck in fantasy football.
Do people get really mad at you in the league too?
Pay attention, Bob. I'm like, look, I got my lineup set. I got other things to do. I know you guys on the waiver wire all day. That's just not how I get down.
Oh, I got other things to do? Well, come on. No, that's no excuse. I hate it when people pull that one off. Someone said like, oh yeah, I got kids and stuff in our fantasy football league. Yeah, I couldn't set my lineup. Can we change it after the fact?
Not setting your lineup is not an excuse. You must set your lineup.
Thank you.
Now, being active in trades and stuff, that's a little different.
You gotta look at the
time. Most victimized fan base. Who has it worst? I think my vote's going to go to the Detroit Lions. It's a great city.
They've never been good.
Just not even what they had one playoff victory all those years ago over the Cowboys. They beat the Cowboys with Barry Sanders. Like, that's an unfair. And if you're a Lions fan, you're essentially born into a hostage situation. You're like, congratulations, you're in Detroit, you're going to cheer for a team that's never going to win, and in fact is going to fritter away and waste great careers.
People constantly talk about taking the Thanksgiving game away from Detroit, but Detroit's like, this is all we have, losing on national television by 2 touchdowns every single Thanksgiving in the 9 o'clock window.
I think you could make that part of a successful presidential campaign. It's like, it's one of the things, I will take away the Thanksgiving game from Detroit. We will no longer be subject to those terrible Lions on Thanksgiving. You can text in most victimized fan base, 710-710. It is Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus is in with us. The Seahawks have a huge question with regard to Jadeveon Clowney. Are they going to be able to get a deal done, and when do we start to worry? We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I don't know how you guys feel about the idea of sending somebody multiple texts, like going 1 text, 2 texts, 3 texts without a response. I know that is actually generally frowned upon, especially in the world of dating. But I bring all of that up to say that if it were me right now in charge of the Seattle Seahawks, I would be texting and texting and texting Jadeveon Clowney over and over and over again. What are you doing? Hey, hey, hi.
You up?
Hey, you up? Maybe. Because I want this guy back. I want this guy signed to a long-term contract. I want them to get it done as quickly as possible. And my frustration, guys, is that I know we're going to have to wait. We're going to have to wait until free agency and see other guys actually make offers to Clowney.
Unlike in a normal situation, I would say it's a cause for concern if you're not hearing back or not getting a deal done. I don't think that's necessarily the case here because this is an unusual negotiation. Usually a team would have the possibility of, hey, we want you to sign a long-term deal. We're not going to let you go into unrestricted free agency. We're going to franchise tag you. So let's see if we can get to a deal before that happens. And it's usually that deadlines make deals. And here, the deadline, because Seattle doesn't have the possibility of franchise tagging, and that's one of the reasons they were able to trade for him, is they said, look, we won't franchise tag you. You'll be able to go into unrestricted free agency. And now all they can do is work on themselves. They got to hit the gym. They got to be doing their sit-ups. They got to get their game right. They got to look make themselves look like the best possible alternative when free agency opens, because Clowney's going to, at the very least, he should go out and see, like, hey, what is everybody going to offer me? And I think what you can hope for as the Seahawks is just give me a chance to match it.
Yeah, this Clowney situation, it reminds me of like back in my dating days, back in college and stuff, where you go to a party, you go to a club, and you interact with this girl, you guys are feeling each other, and she goes, hey, don't worry, I'm leaving with you tonight, boom. But you got to sit there, be with your boys, and watch every other dude take their shot. Every other dude take their shot. You're just hoping that she stays true to her word, like, look, we're hanging out. Don't worry about it. So it's nervous times for the Seahawks right now. You're banking on your game. Did you spit enough game to stay in her ear and stay on her mind the rest of the night?
What's the trick in that situation? Because it's definitely not what I just said, being annoying and saying, hey, hi. Because there's sort of an element of you got to be cool, calm, collected, like a quarterback in the pocket, and stand your ground.
Got to be an assassin when it comes to talking about the other guys. Like, you don't want to be messing with those Bengals. Like, you don't want any part of them. You know where they've been?
You know what I heard about the Bengals?
I've seen them do an awful lot, and I just wouldn't be doing that if I was you. Like, when it comes to, oh, okay, you're interested in the Cleveland Browns and the last time they've been in the playoffs. They done anything of consequence? Yeah, negative recruiting.
Yeah, you got to throw a little salt in there. Throw a little salt in there.
But if you throw a little salt in there, don't you sort of come off as a little bit clingy? You want to come off as clingy, I think, with Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, I feel like, yeah, this might be the equivalent of throwing an engagement ring at him right now, even though you just met him, even though you only had, like, well, let's say, what, like a year with him? So what is that in dating terms? Are we talking about, like, 2 months or so? But you know what? I'm fine
maybe
with
just
it.
The move-in. Like, hey, you approach it that way. Not okay. Not an engagement ring, but you say, hey, maybe we start to, you know, leave some stuff here. Your stuff's here already. I got kind of a drawer going on. Maybe it'd be easier if your stuff was just here.
You can get a man cave. Yeah. You can have three TVs. TVs in every room. A TV in the bathroom.
Here's what I would say is that you can't try to pressure. You can't try the hard sell.
Yeah.
All you can do is make it clear what you want and say, hey, I think it's totally great that you look around and find what the best option is for you. Let me make it clear that, like, I want it to be here, and whatever you'd like to get done, I'm willing to talk about and discuss that. Like, this is my sole emphasis. This is my number one priority. So I don't begrudge you taking time, and you should look around because it's a huge decision, and you've waited a long time to get out on the open market. I just want you to know that, like, I'm willing to make any of the changes you request.
You're my main priority. You want to go to therapy? What do you want to do right now to make this thing work? And I think that's what the Hawks have to do. They have to show Clowney that, one, they're making moves to make the team better. If they're stagnant, they're not doing anything. And I think they have to include him on what they're doing. You have to talk to him, not on the same level you would a Russell Wilson, where you're kind of letting him know every move. But you got to give him hints like, look, this is what we're thinking. We're going to improve this position. We're going to do that. This is how we see your play next year. So just including him in the whole process, I think, will better the chances of him coming back to Seattle.
We talked about the guys that you see across the bar that you're nervous about. I'm going to give you guys a couple of teams that have a whole lot of salary cap space, and I'm curious as to if you think that they actually are a danger to bring Jadeveon Clowney to their team. How about the Indianapolis Colts, who have the second most effective cap space per over the cap in the NFL? We're talking close to $90 million. Team without a definitive quarterback, but a quarterback who's not bad, and an Indianapolis team that at the very least is solid, but it's not much more than that.
That is the most meh team possible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like Jacoby Brissett. Like that's going to be the sales pitch? Like unless you're going to tell him that Andrew Luck is coming back, why would you, unless it's just strictly a play for the cash?
Here's your pitch. Jadeveon, you get a chance to play the Texans twice a season. That's the only one that you really have if you're Indianapolis.
And you're indoor, control the weather. But it's all about the quarterback. I don't think a guy goes to a team like Clowney at his where he is in his career without a quarterback.
I would agree. And he said that. He talked about Russell Wilson being a big part of the reason he wanted to come to Seattle. So I don't see a team that has, in my mind, everybody looks at the Colts and thinks Brissett's probably not the guy. Like, he's okay, but he's not someone. If we wonder if Jimmy Garoppolo is the guy that can get you over the top, you're fairly certain Jacoby Brissett is not the guy who's going to get you over the top.
Another team with a quarterback that I don't think we're the biggest fans of, but they have salary cap space. They made the playoffs this past season. The Buffalo Bills, $80 million in cap space. Is it the same situation?
Not going to Buffalo.
No,
you
Buffalo.
You want to go to Buffalo?
Go to Buffalo, where it's cold as heck. And then two, Tom Brady seems like he's coming back to New England. You got to go through Tom Brady? I think not.
I just think you stop with Buffalo.
It's Buffalo.
Like, really? Buffalo?
They got Have you seen where you're going to live? Slush there?
I just go back to Bruce Irvin right after they traded Percy Harvin, when Bruce Irvin got onto the plane and spoke to Ken Norton Jr. and said, look, Norton, when you guys trade me, I'm just saying, no, we're cold. Do not send me to Buffalo. Do not send me to Buffalo.
Conceptually, another team with a lot of cap space, you're not 100% sure about the quarterback, the Denver Broncos. How about them? The AFC West, outside of the Kansas City Chiefs, it seems like it's a division that's up for grabs.
Yeah, and you'd play with Von Miller. That'd probably be pretty attractive to a pass rusher.
Yeah.
Drew Lock might be good.
He might be. We'll find out this year. I think Von Miller has to be what Dwayne Brown was for the Hawks. He's got to sell it. But, again, it's the quarterback position. You're going to face the Super Bowl champions twice a year. Your role just became that much tougher. But, again, if he stays in the NFC West, you still got to go up against the 49ers, and the Cardinals are no chumps anymore, the Rams. But I still don't think Denver is a place for Clowney.
Those are the teams that I think you really have to worry about if you are looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, hey, is it realistic for us to get Jadeveon Clowney, and can someone take him away from the Seahawks? So on that standpoint, things are good. But I just want this wrapped up. I want it done. I don't want to think about this at all. I want to start operating as if Jadeveon Clowney is a member of the Seattle Seahawks.
Stop sending texts. Hey, you're looking needy.
Hey, I put three Y's at the end of it, though. So, I mean, like, it really...
You got to throw the dot, dot, dot in there. Hey, man, I'm around if you want to hang. Dot, dot, dot.
What you do?
Yeah, that's the ultimate cool play.
Is the dot, dot, dot signifies, like, uncertainty, or, like, you fill in
the
blanks?
You make of it what you will.
Yeah. I never knew an ellipses was such a part of today's dating.
Yes, says the girl who's been single for 5 years.
It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. Michael Bumpus, we always love it when you come in and join us, buddy.
Thanks. Appreciate you guys.
We will see you on Friday. He is Michael Bumpus, Danny and Gallant with Danny O'Neill and myself, Paul Gallant, on 710 ESPN Seattle. When we look at the Seattle Seahawks and we look at what they can do to be better this offseason, is it possible that they can add to the defense by changing the way they do things on offense? We'll look at that next at 710 ESPN Seattle.
We have you up. Hey, you. What up? You out. Another one, you out. Another, you out.